Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT for March 31st, 2021. This was a go-home show. We are getting ready for next week's two-night edition of TakeOver Stand and Deliver. Lots of hype on this show. I thought it did a surprisingly good job of driving home a lot of feud components. When it didn't seem like it would have a lot of time to do so, because we are getting 10, 12 matches, whatever it is. Some came to the forefront and some did not, and that is fine, and I like the decisions they made. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. Let's talk about the main event Battle Royal. Now, I know that after the Battle Royal, we got a very unexpected and very welcome like fifth segment of Io Shirai and Raquel Gonzalez. We will talk about their segment shortly after, but we're not going to roll it into this. Let's talk about the 11-man Battle Royal, that being Jake Atlas, Tyler Rust, Austin Theory, Pete Dunne, Kushida, Leon Ruff, Isaiah Swerve Scott, Bronson Reed, Cameron Grimes, Dexter Lumis, and L.A. Knight. That is the order of their elimination. Sorry for spoilers. And the top six of those 11 from Ruff on, that will be the order of entrance into the Gauntlet Eliminator next week to determine Johnny Gargano's next challenger for the North American Championship. I really, really appreciated Vic and Wade stepping into the ring, explaining this to any fans who still might not know how this thing worked. And I also really, really appreciated the touch of the graphic below on the screen. Every time somebody got eliminated, they showed their position in next week's Gauntlet Eliminator. Just a nice touch that I thought they didn't even have to think of, but it was a very, very good idea. So now we know next week LA Knight has the quote unquote best chance of winning because he enters the Gauntlet Eliminator last. He's not going to win because they're not going to go heel-heel with Gargano. That makes no sense. It'll be Bronson Reed or Dexter Lumis, as we have, as we've been saying. Reed, if they want the better match, Lumis, if they want the feud match. But that was the Battle Royal, and we also got Dunn and Kushida eliminating each other right before the spot where otherwise they could have made the Gauntlet Eliminator. This is exactly what I predicted to happen with them eliminating each other and then the match being made. I wondered how long would it take for that match to be made. They just went to commercial, came back and said, oh yeah, that thing that happened right before, it's now official for TakeOver. I liked how they laid out this Battle Royal from an elimination standpoint, but in terms of Battle Royals with a lot going on, there was a lot of dead time where guys sold at times where they wouldn't be selling just to get over some stories in the ring. But whatever, Battle Royals are what they are. Tom, who are you and what did you think?
I am at Tom Stelp on Twitter, and at the top I will take a moment to plug an upcoming movie review I have on The Torch. It's actually going to be debuting in audio form on the next week's episode of Grit and Glitter for Luchadoras, which is playing the, this year, an online version of the South by Southwest Film Festival. And it is about three women who wrestle in Juarez, Mexico. And then the written version of the review will also be hitting The Torch shortly thereafter. So after losing to Reed, I did think that LA Knight would find a way to brush past that in short order. And this is just about the best way I can imagine for that to have happened. I like that he is featured in this way. Even though he was probably one of the top options, I did not expect him to go on to the second night of TakeOver. So giving him this win here, I think, is a nice way to feature him going in, and now he's the one that that they'll talk about throughout the gauntlet as being the last one to come in, since we know the order. There definitely was, I felt, a potential to build Dunn and Kushida more in the gauntlet, since we knew they were probably headed that way. to draw that out a little bit more, to milk it a little bit more before it explodes into a singles match. But they did exactly what we predicted they would do here, which is fine. And it lets it keeps them on the card while also getting Swerve and Ruff on there as well. And you know what? Damn it. Even though it went on way too long, in this particular scenario of a chaotic battle royal, I actually enjoyed Dexter Lumis's shtick of just standing there and doing nothing. While
the best
all
wrestling
of this,
we've ever seen him do.
That is fair. with all of this commotion going on around him and the nice little moment where Pete Dunne sort of backed up his way and looked over, and you wonder what's going to happen, and Pete Dunne, he doesn't even do his shrug spot, which he overuses, and he used it in the spot tonight where I was like, hey, you didn't. It's like phrasing for him almost. You don't need to use it quite that much. But he didn't even use that here. Just evaluates Dexter and decides, I'm going to go over to the other corner and beat up someone else. And Dexter just keeps standing there. It's the first time that Dexter standing there and doing nothing actually worked for me.
Yeah, I genuinely dug that too. I thought it went on. I thought it was very funny that it went on past the point where people could have eliminated him to get their own spot in the battle royal. Like he was just ignored to the point where he got into the gauntlet eliminator. It didn't bug me. He brings to the table what he brings, and this was a really funny use of him. So yeah, it was. What do you know? We both liked the Dexter Lumis thing. Nate, who are you, and what did you think of the Battle Royal?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I do the NXT hits and misses, and I also did like Dexter Lumis's little shtick there, surprisingly. I haven't really been super high on Dexter Lumis, you know, like you guys in quite a while now. Originally, I kind of liked the shtick, but it grew old fast. But yeah, I did kind of like this. It was interesting to see him standing in the corner, really menacing. It kind of almost harkened back to like, I kind of kept getting like Kane vibes from it, which you know, is definitely not a bad thing. But yeah, certainly like that. we were talking last week about and Tom brought this up a little bit ago. LA Knight needed to kind of get his win back after Bronson Reed took him out last week. And I was kind of thinking maybe he might get the win here tonight or something, you know, look something to make him look a little bit better raise his stakes up a little bit here tonight. And I didn't think he'd necessarily win. I think I thought he might just kind of like get a signature spot or a signature elimination or something like that. But I'm glad to see him in that spot. I don't know if we'll. I don't think we'll actually see him face Gargano for the title, but it's an interesting proposition anyway. I kind of like the idea, but yeah, you're right. The heel dynamic wouldn't necessarily work. Overall, I like this whole idea of like the battle royal, the gauntlet eliminator. At first, it seemed a little bit confusing and convoluted. And I mean, I remember even last week, Tom was saying he had to kind of go back I don't remember if you rewatched the segment or reread something about it or whatever, but to kind of refresh your memory on what was going on, because it isn't super straightforward. It didn't seem super straightforward. So like you said earlier, Kelly, I also appreciated the fact that they kind of spelled everything out. They got in the ring, Wade and Vic got in the ring and kind of explained what was going on, how everything was going to go down, what the rules were, and kind of just made sure everybody understood what was going on. The graphic also was great, a great touch, and just kind of made sure that we all got everything. Because, even going into this tonight, I couldn't remember. I'm like, okay, are we getting a battle royal? Are we getting the Gauntlet Eliminator tonight? It was just, maybe that was just me. There's so many different things swirling around in my brain at any given moment. Who knows? But I couldn't quite remember what was going on. So I was kind of glad that they broke everything down and kind of just spelled everything out, like an explain like I'm five version of the rules for this match. So, I dig it. I like the angle and where they're going with it so far. So thumbs up.
That battle royal, 12 minutes and 53 seconds. That's fairly short to be the longest match on an NXT episode, but it was indeed the longest match on the episode. I felt like I had a jumping off point from something else you said, something about the Battle Royal, but I'll be damned if I can remember it now. Do you want to call us? That is 515-605-9345, and hit that one if you want to ask us anything. Or you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. So, yeah, we got five emails. None of them fit right here exactly. We will get them in when it is time to get them in. But for now, let us go to the phone lines. And let's talk to Darrell. Darrell, what's the first thing you got for us tonight?
Oh man, how you guys doing tonight? Tonight was a great, pretty interesting. Now, I wouldn't say great, but pretty interesting go home show. I want to talk about the 300-pound bear that's of the show, which was built throughout the show, and that was Raquel and Io Shirai, starting with the match between her and Zoe Starks. Again, I'm liking how they continue throwing Zoe Starks out there, but they're giving her a little bit, and she's showing a little bit more, and she's getting to grow, and hopefully this deal come down like six, maybe a year down the line, and we really get to see something tonight. I was loving the build that they also had with Io Shirai and Raquel Gonzalez throughout the night, and how they built Raquel as this monster in everything, and they built EO as the person you're gonna have to kill her to take her down, but they still made Raquel seem super dominant and stuff like that. So I love that. I love that they had the show closing angle. That women's division is looking real, real thick. It looked like they had about 25, 30 girls out there. Hopefully they again can use this to build around the women and make them more part of the show. But my question for you guys was, how did you like the match and how did you like the build? Because to me, even though EO got a little one-up at the end of the show, I still feel like they built and showed their hand a little bit that they could set up Io Shirai to be standing tall on night one because of that never say die, you can't put me down attitude. But what do you guys think?
This... like my quick, it just happened, snap reaction to this is one of my favorite go-home show builds to a championship match ever. I loved that they went back to this four times. I loved that Raquel destroyed her every time until they finally got to the end, and Shirai just wouldn't give it up. Shirai stealing the focus from LA Knight and Johnny Gargano in this battle royal that just ended, that was the main event, and saying once more, it's not over. We're still on TV. I still want to show everyone that I can take you down. This is a very straightforward feud, but this worked on me. We're going to get an email later about what match we're anticipating most, and I think right now it's this one on a two-night show that has a lot of very important, very juicy men's matches on it. I think now this is the one that I'm most in on just because I love the way that they built this and they didn't rely on anything but what was happening out there in the stage and in the ring. There was a match here, Zoe Stark versus Raquel Gonzalez. Gonzalez goes over in 4:53. Stark, once again, looking very strong. I mean, physically, just she's a strong girl. But Gonzalez, of course, goes over in a match that did not overstay its welcome. If this had gone 10, 12 minutes, I don't think that does Raquel any favors heading into a match with Shirai. But yes, Zoe Stark, I think a very bright future there. And I like what I see more and more every time she's out there. We did get an email, very straightforward, from Michael McGivern. I effing love Zoe Stark. That is all, Michael McGivern. Me too, Michael. So there you go for that match and for this build. And yeah, it's really straightforward here, but I'm interested to hear if you guys are loving this as much as I am, but I am loving this. Also, very funny to see the entire non-televised women's roster on there. That's one of those things where you could watch this episode in 5 years and go, oh, there's the whole roster debuting at the same time. Nate, what did you think about our one-night build for the women's championship match?
So the one-night build, I definitely liked it. I like the fact that the and I've brought this up quite a few times on the show in the past, that one of the things that I kind of like about the Attitude Era is the fact that there were the main event, well, if not the main event story, but at least the biggest story on the show would usually kind of weave its way through the show, and that's kind of what we had here tonight. We had quite a few segments. I think you said it was either four or five. I kind of lost track. I thought it was four, but maybe it was five. Where they had interactions with one another, Io Shirai just, whether attacking her, and then kind of getting her butt kicked and kind of trying to come back, and it all just worked so well, and it was a great way to kind of build this and show how Io was just basically not going to take Raquel's actions lying down. I really dug this, and I've got a lot of things going through my head at the moment. You said earlier that one of the things that really kind of made this feel important, and I can't agree with you more, is the fact that Io Shirai almost pulled like a Stone Cold Steve Austin here. Right at the end of the Battle Royal, her music hits, she comes out, and that was like instantly what went through my head, was the glass shattering, Stone Cold coming out at the end of a Raw or something and making the show kind of about him, which I, in a way, it sounds like it's a bad thing when I say that, but I say that as a good thing, because here you have, and saying this even 10 years ago would have been like crazy, but here you have the NXT, you've got a women's champion coming out and overshadowing the guy's main event, which is mind-blowing. It's in the best way possible. But she came out and she had this presence about her, and it did. It kind of I guess overshadowed isn't the best word, but it basically because it didn't really overshadow or kill any of that momentum or anything by that stretch of the imagination. But she came out and all of a sudden, boom! Spotlight's on her, on the women's division. Great. I can't say enough about it. We're rolling Zoe Stark and Dakota, and Raquel Gonzalez into this too.
Yeah.
Okay. Michael McGivern, I cannot agree with you more. I also effing love Tony Stark, Zoe Stark. My roommate's name is Tony. So Tony Stark, Zoe Stark, who knows?
Yeah. She is Iron Man. Yep.
She absolutely. There we go. So, first off, when we first saw her, we were kind of thinking, there was a little bit of greenness here and there. I might want to just kind of chalk that up to nerves. Each time I see her, I don't notice that, or notice that less and less, rather. I really feel like we've kind of got something here with her. She's got this presence about her. She's got a look about her, even though the look right now is still kind of plain. I feel like she's going to fall into it. I feel it's almost like NXT Charlotte. She had a very, it was much more plain, compared to like the peacocking she does now. But, I feel like she's probably going to come into her own a little bit more with the style and attire. I really like what she's got going on here. Yes, she may have still lost here tonight. I think she's lost every major singles match she's had at this point, except for the squash, any squash match that she's had, she's won. But even so, even in a loss, she got a lot of offense in against Raquel. She took some offense herself that, I feel like a lot of people wouldn't have got up from. So, I feel like they're booking her really strong. Even though she lost tonight, I don't feel like she lost any steam, at least in my eyes. I'm really on board with Zoe Stark. Like, I can't wait to see what happens in, like, 6 months where she's at.
Yeah, I liked what this did for Zoe, but I also liked what the match did for Raquel, because it was able to sell the idea if she hits you with that single-arm choke slam, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's happened
it's
to that
over.
Point. It's done. And Vic helped tell that story, and it was well told. Tom?
So we love Zoe Stark. they love Zoe Stark. She is on TV in a prominent position every single week, and she is really doing an excellent job living up to that spot. So, yes, I am all for it, and in particular, that super blockbuster spot she did was really nice. I mean, in a wrestling landscape where high spots barely mean anything anymore, that one made me sit at attention.
Was that the top rope neckbreaker? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
It was called as a neckbreaker, and I did write it down that way, but thinking back on it, I don't know. I mean, sure, whatever, that thing.
I just wanted to make sure it was the right spot, because that spot was phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm not going to push back too hard on everything else between Io and Raquel, because they didn't do anything wrong. I'm ultimately fine with it. It's not the hill to, it's very, very, very distant from the hill that I will die on. But yes, it's straightforward, but this feud was already more straightforward than that. And I felt telling an effective story of just Io's beaten everyone. She hasn't beaten Raquel, so she wants to beat Raquel. And the question is whether or not she's going to be able to do that. We saw when Dakota Kai tried to step in her way, and she just sidestepped Dakota. Like, yeah, no, this match isn't about the nonsense. This isn't about, you know, who's on the outside and what the storyline is. This is just about who's going to win for the gold. And so doing all this other stuff, and especially having Io instigate it by coming out and being the attacker, I thought was it was fine for a different feud, but not this one. So I just thought that was kind of strange, because this match was, I agree with Kelly, this is the one that I am looking forward to the most on the two-night show, and it's also the one that I am in the most doubt regarding the finish. So they didn't need to do anything to get me there beyond that, and when they tried, I thought it was maybe a step too far.
Yeah, I wondered if we were going to pass that way through, like how was Io's attack motivated? It didn't seem to jive with the rest of the storyline, which was about winning a wrestling match. Like, why did she do all this tonight? It made for me, I had a lot of fun with it, but I'm not sure why Io did any of it. Darrell, what's the next thing on your mind?
Okay. Now I want to go on about the second best thing on the show. Prime target with Adam Cole and Kyle Riley. And I like how they had this sit-down moment for both guys. That brought me back to, if you ever watched Ring of Honor back in the day, to Adam Cole on story time, back when he would cut some amazing promos on there and stuff, especially about Kyle O'Reilly. I like how they patched everything together just in those few weeks and made it feel even more significant. And that looked like a match that on night two gonna have to go on first and gonna be hard to follow. What did you guys like about it? How did you what did you didn't like about it? And how did you like how they put it all together? Because it was kind of a little bit different than most of the prime targets that they usually do.
So this prime target was all of my favorite things about the best ones that they've done. There was a little bit of new content, but it was more about hyping this match with a lot of existing content and just some really, really fun video editing and some shots and some music cues, very cinematic, making this look like it was a movie. This was almost to make it seem like this could be a cinematic match, which amusingly, Tom and I were on the Blake and Sal show earlier today talking about TakeOver, and one of the guys on the podcast suggested this was a nomination for a cinematic match. This is an unsanctioned match, so I don't think it'll happen that way, but I could see like the 4K cameras and drones outside and this going all over the place. I don't know. I thought it was a lot of fun to be able to see these old photos of Cole and O'Reilly. I thought they did pretty well with this content. And there was some things lacking in the final build to what this match was, but I'm starting to come around to the idea that this isn't the last match or even near the last match in this feud, there's plenty of time to build more from where we are. So maybe it's okay. Or maybe that I'm just telling myself that to feel a little better about it, but whatever. I'd be very interested to know who all these folks were who put together this Prime Target, because they really did a lot of cool things with this. As a result, it seems like a larger than life kind of match. And again, Tom and I talked about this earlier. Hopefully that match, if it is just a straightforward match, which I assume it is, then hopefully the two work it like a feud match, like a blood feud match, and not just a really, really good match they can do in 25 minutes because they know they're capable of having a great technical match. Tom?
I agree that I'm not, you know, doomsaying the end of the world over this lackluster build, because, you know, there will be more matches that come from it beyond just this one. But this, yes, very good video. The music choice in particular, I thought, brought it to the next level. This very good video has, you know, it had the unfortunate task of compiling material from a lackluster build. It's a build that's so lackluster that even a very good video can't really save it for me at this point. It really is entirely up to Cole and O'Reilly to have that feud match that you're talking about to get it there, and to help us forget that they barely even have a reason to be fighting in the first place. It's very obligatory. And you know, of course, if you were going to ask two guys on the roster to do that, they're just about the best two that you could ask. So the match will get there. But the video, for as good as it was, I don't know if it was too little too late, but it was definitely too late.
One of my favorite tiny things about this video is that last week I went off more than I had to about, or maybe less than I had to, about Kyle's Fauxhawk. And
they cropped it.
They cropped it. They closed in. Like with Adam Cole, they didn't close in on him. So, you know, there was intent. If there was no intent, they would have done it to both guys just to have it be like tighter and as the director would say, more intimate, that kind of setting. They cropped his hair out. They just brought it closer so his stupid little Fauxhawk in the front wasn't showing. Oh, vindication. Sweet, sweet vindication. Nate?
So I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add that I think really wasn't already covered. I agree. I thought this was a great video. I love the music choice. I got to agree with you there, Tom. I thought that really was kind of a nice cherry on top. The old history, the old photos, everything was put together just really well. Probably one of the better Prime Target videos we've seen in a little while, I think, at least in recent memory. But as far as like the match, I'm kind of somewhere, I think, in between the two of you guys. I wouldn't say this particular video salvaged everything for me, because I've been kind of a little down on this. I don't even want to say I've been down on it, because I haven't really been down on it, but I haven't felt like it's been as important as I thought it was going to when we got here. So I don't want to say that this completely like salvaged that, but it put a little bit more faith in this for me. And then, you know, Kelly, you actually brought this up, and I think you made a good point, is this probably isn't going to be the last match for this feud. I think this is probably just the beginning here. It's a feud that could probably even take us into like SummerSlam weekend, something along those lines, if they do it outright. Especially if they do something to reintroduce Bobby Fish in some meaningful way, when he is able to return. Not that I necessarily think that that's going to have any like major implications or anything. Not that Bobby Fish wasn't the biggest player in a disputed era, but he is that wild card right now. We still haven't heard from Bobby Fish in terms of what has happened with this breakup of Undisputed Era. We've kind of gotten Roddy's perspective, and Roddy's now kind of doing his own thing here. Especially now, he walked out tonight, just kind of like, I'm done, I quit, and whatever. We don't know what's going on with Roddy. So you know, I'm kind of really curious to see how Bobby Fish is going to play into the feud going forward. I don't think he's going to have anything to do with this match, coming up, a takeover. I think he's going to be a little bit further down the road, but I really want to see if he has a big role in the feud or not. So that's probably the only thing I want to add that wasn't brought up already. I think otherwise you guys covered it pretty nicely.
All right, Darrell, go ahead with number three.
Okay, now I'm going to the next thing that was, to me, third biggest, and Tommaso Ciampa. Ah, that promo that he cut brought me back into it and made me wish that this is the beginning of a feud between him and Walter, because, he really pulled it out. And it kind of tied into the storyline that they've been telling with him, even though it kind of off. It seemed like he was able to pull it all together. And you would say you would want to give this promo to him months ago when we was wondering what they're going to do with him and the team and the Timothy Thatcher. Is he defending people or whatever? But how he cut this promo today was amazing. And I like how Walter was questioning him and saying, like, he don't have it no more. And he would have been the perfect form, but he don't got it. He ain't respecting the ring. You know, the same Walter stuff. But, you know, I guess because of who Walter is, he just make everything seem so serious because he's the Thanos of the NXT universe, and he can snap anybody or slap anybody away. But that promo tonight from Tommaso Ciampa, oh, man, that was great. What do you guys think about this bill and what they did for this match tonight? And do you agree that if on this was better terms, this should be the beginning of a feud? And could you see Tommaso Ciampa pulling out a victory?
I don't think Ciampa will win this match. So early in the show, Walter cut a promo on Ciampa, and it was good. It was pretty good. Ciampa late in the show cuts the promo on Walter, and I have no words for how good I thought this was. I have nothing. I don't remember the last WWE promo that was this good. He let loose. He rose and fell. He hit a lot of money lines. Didn't rely on catchphrasing at all. Listen up, WWE. And this, it was just pitch perfect. It was a promo that did more for the match than all of the convoluted build so far, which has been fine, but just a stunning, stunning promo from him. I don't know what else to say, Nate.
I 100% agree. I even said it to you guys, you know, in the Skype chat, like everybody in the company can probably learn something, or not even probably. Everybody in the company can learn something from Tommaso Ciampa in terms of mic work. Like, holy crap, that was probably hands down one of the greatest promo I've seen in recent memory in the WWE. The intensity, just the veracity, the emotion that he portrayed and was able to get across. You know, one of the things that, you know, I've talked about a couple times is that eye contact that he does. He's able to look into the camera. LA Knight's doing the same thing right now. They look into the camera. They're looking at you. They're not just talking off screen. They're not talking like, you know, or off camera rather. They're not somebody, you know, standing off camera. They're not like, you know, like we see with in WWE or in other, you know, other NXT promos and stuff. They're looking directly at you. And that eye contact, especially right now in the COVID world, we're not getting eye contact with people, right? Like, and I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but, you know, like, I'm in Zoom meetings all day with people, right? And you're not actually looking at people's eyes. You're looking at your screen, and the webcam is, you know, above. You're not actually getting eye contact. And, like, that's, like, I know for me, that's messing with me. And that's, like, it's a thing overall, right? And kind of, like, messing with people's psyches. So I feel like right now, especially, and I don't even know if they're thinking about that in terms of, you know, the current, you know, COVID world and environment that we're in. But, you know, Tommaso Ciampa looking directly at the camera, looking at you, you know, you can make eye contact with him. that speaks to you. And it's a subconscious thing, but it's so effective. And I know that really, that was something that I noticed, and I have been noticing quite a bit with his, you know, his promos. But yeah, I loved everything about this. As far as him winning, I'm going to say he's probably not going to win. However, I kind of almost at the same time want to see, I almost want to see him win. I don't put a whole lot of stock in it, but like, I can almost kind of picture, you know, a scenario where, because like, you know, where especially tonight he was talking about how people have talked about he's not, you know, the Tommaso Ciampa of 2018, you know, he's kind of softened and whatnot. I could actually see him, you know, saying, you know what, well, screw you guys. I'm going to show you I am still that Tommaso Ciampa, squeaking out the win, winning that UK title, and then having a bit more of a back-and-forth feud with Walter, you know, and this just not being a one-off thing. I could see it happening. I don't think it will, but where just that promo tonight and a couple of things he said kind of got the gears turning in my head going, maybe, probably not, but maybe. But overall, yeah, that promo was like, I probably like ranks right up there for at least within the last year in WWE.
We also got an email from JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. What do you think of Walter's future is after Stand and Deliver? Do you think he's bound for a long run in NXT proper, or will he quickly return to the UK? I can't imagine he'll lose his UK title to Ciampa. So that begs the question, if he's still UK champion, how long can he be away from the UK brand? I could see him challenging Finn, assuming Finn retains against Cross and Cross moves up to the main roster, the Raw or SmackDown after Mania for the next NXT title, as it was rumored before the pandemic that Walter would face Finn at a UK takeover for the UK title. I don't know if that was just rumored. I think it might have been announced for Dublin, or at least it was clear that it was going to. Is this a path you see for Walter, or do you see something else? What do you think his next 6 months look like? As always, love the show, and go VIP! I think the next 6 months look like another 180 days to add to his eventual breaking of 1,000-day reign. What an insanely wonderful thing that would be. He's at like 790 or something like that. I don't think there's any chance that Walter loses that championship on a quick excursion to the States. I just don't think it makes sense for it to be Ciampa, but keep Walter very, very strong for whoever does eventually beat him over there. But as I start to talk myself through it here, if not Ciampa, then who? Like, who is this person? I just don't know who that person is. I'd be very happy if we went back to Tyler Bate. I love Tyler Bate. But otherwise, who is this person? Tom.
So this is a compelling enough matchup that even in a short feud, that's really just the prelude of what will be a longer story more centered around Timothy Thatcher, I think. Yeah, it's interesting enough that it does make you legitimately wonder, what if? And I think it's much more believable that, especially since Imperium is being rebuilt as a what seems like it's going to be a relatively major force on domestic NXT, with Walter as a component this time, I think it's much more realistic to think that Walter is going to fly back and forth to do double duty than it is to think that Ciampa is going to switch over to NXT UK. We'll probably reference this several times throughout the night when we were on Blake and Sal earlier, and that episode hasn't dropped yet, but I was saying, you know, Ciampa's not going to uproot his family. And as I think about what Walter would do doing double duty, Ciampa doesn't have to uproot his family. So I'm negating my own argument there. He could fly back and forth as well. But I do not think that is going to happen. I can't match the gushing passion for Ciampa's promo. It was good. So I will focus in on a couple of specifics. By the time we talked about it last week, I had forgotten all about Walter ripping the necklace off of Ciampa's neck. And in that moment, though, when he did rip the necklace, I was thinking, they either should have established what that means to him ahead of time, or Vic Joseph should be telling us what it means to him right now so we know why he's so distraught over it. But not only did Ciampa describe the meaning of the necklace tonight, I really liked how he brought up why it perturbed him and then passed it off like, but that's okay. You didn't know. That was a nice little touch. And then I am wondering, maybe you guys remember, I'm wondering if they have ever referred to Ciampa as his pre-NXT calling card nickname, Psycho Killer, on NXT before. I just remember when the tapings were still a thing, people would chant Psycho Killer at him. And, I mean, this is Ciampa, and he's always very much in character. But I just body language, especially in moments like during a random tag match and he was on the apron or something and people were chanting it at him, it felt like from his body language that he didn't like the Psycho Killer thing being leveled at him. And it's like, you know, I've got a new branding now. I'm moved away from what I was before. For whatever reason, he may not have liked it. That's just the impression I got from how he seemed to react when people would chant it at him. So that's just why it stood out to me when he said, so you're wondering if I'm still the Blackheart, if I'm still the Psycho Killer. Cause I feel like that's the first time that's been mentioned on NXT TV, or if not, it's one of very few.
I'm certain they did it during the Cruiserweight Classic. They referred back to it at least, but now you've got me thinking. I was thinking, well, of course they did, but then it occurred to me that it might just be that the audience was doing that the whole time, and it gets to a point where the announcers can't just ignore it. It's there. It's part of the story. So there you go. Do you have one more for us, Darrell?
Yes, I do. And no, they never call him Psycho Killer. You always just heard the fans, especially when he showed up in the Cruiserweight Classic as Psycho Killer. They were screaming that to him and Johnny Wrestling to Johnny. But they eventually called Johnny Wrestling on the show, but never called him Psycho Killer. So that was something that was unique, that they let him bring it up. And I also like how he pulled this in with him. So, yeah. Now, my last thing for you guys would be this. First, I put these together. First, with the triple threat match with the tag teams, I felt like that was the only one that they could have did a little bit better. They tried to tie it in with the Cruiserweight, and then they didn't have both people speak. I like that they allowed Escobar to speak and him give his reason on why he's the Emperor and stuff like that. But the tag team, they could have did better with. That was iffy. And the last build that they did was the Killer Cross, Karrion Kross versus Finn Balor. It was the typical same Finn sit-down promo that they've been giving him since he came back and stuff like that, and him talking about dragging him in deep waters. And Karrion Kross, you know, going on with that. I think those three things right there were at the bottom of what they did for building up the show tonight. But just because of the other three that we already spoke on, those sold the show for both nights itself, and I guess that's why they could have did a subpar job with those other ones. What do you guys think?
We thank you, as always, for the call. Darrell, let's go. Let's start with the two. Let's keep this manageable, split them up. But we can start with the Cruiserweight as well as the tag, since that all kind of happened at once. And then we'll go to Cross and Balor. So we had an open challenge, Santos Escobar, the Cruiserweight champion, although he's normally in matches where it's not on the line, calls out for a challenger, and it's Tyler Breeze, who is roundly booed in a very strange move, I thought. And then they're chanting pro Escobar stuff. And at the end of the match, when Escobar wins, people are like clapping and slapping the plexiglass. but like what you hear is the piped in booing. I thought that was very odd, but they defined Tyler Breeze down pretty far, and he still went 10-38 in a match that probably didn't have to go that, given Tyler Breeze's spot. But that's what we got. 10 minutes, 38 seconds. Santos wins with the Phantom Driver. And then his cronies, his buddies, get involved in a brief. They're going to attack Breeze after the match. And so MSK makes the save, and then Grizzled Young Veterans make the appearance on the Tron. In I figured when this happened and it was so quick, I thought, well, they got other matches they want to promote ahead of this. And that's fine, because this one's just being promoted on the fact that it's going to be a really fun, chaotic, six-person schmoz. It's going to be a crazy triple threat, and it doesn't really need a whole lot more than that. I thought they wisely focused on other things from this. I thought it was interesting that we got Escobar doing the only selling for his match with Jordan Devlin. They didn't even really talk about the ladder. They didn't really talk about the match that much. It was very, like, gosh, if I didn't know that that match existed, I might have forgotten based on this episode. So that was very, very weird. But I also don't know what Devlin's travel schedule is, or how that works into anything. So anyway, on the Legado del Fantasma family of matches and stuff, Tom.
Definitely agree that these combined builds to these particular takeover matches, if anything, was sort of all but swept under the rug tonight, this was it. But I do also agree that for everything else they prioritized, I think that they prioritized correctly. I just get sad seeing Tyler Breeze now. That's been going on for a while, but especially in a situation like this. I mean, we saw the brilliance of the Tyler Breeze character, but Tyler Breeze now feels more like he's a continuation of his original Mike Dalton. You can hardly call it a character. He was just a generic jobber that went out and lost, and that's what he feels like again. So it's very sad. I just hope that he's happy. I hope he's content with the career that he's had and with the wrestling school he started up and whatever else. When Grizzled Young Veterans appear on the screen, you know, the people in the ring and Legado del Fantasma at ringside are looking at two different screens, and the camera can only see the one that's above the crowd. So, you know, we sitting at home don't realize until the camera pans over that the traditional position for a Tron to be is also showing the same video. So it sort of looked like Legado del Fantasma was looking up where those things usually get played, and they're waiting for it, maybe wondering if there are technical difficulties. So I'm not criticizing anything there. I'm just pointing out that it was sort of humorous due to the we didn't have all the information as to what was going on in the room sitting at home. And I noticed that Gibson said MSK is apparently distracted by silly memes. So I hope that the utilization of these screens continues into the match, and we get an Orton Bray Wyatt kind of thing, where instead of maggots appearing during the match, silly memes pop up on the screens, and MSK loses track of the action because of them.
Oh, there you go. That would be a hell of a thing to do in this match. Seeing Breeze, I guess the closest comp I've got is when I went to a show. It was a Raw or SmackDown show, I can't remember which now, in St. Paul probably, or maybe Mankato, about 15 years ago. And the dark match, Val Venus was in it. And he got a pretty decent-sized pop. And there was a guy I was sitting next to on one side that I didn't actually go with. He was just asking me stuff because he was listening in to me and my brother, and we were talking about a lot of stuff, and I knew a lot of stuff. And he goes, "Is Val Venus back?" And I went, "He's actually never left. He just hasn't been on TV in like 5 years." He was like, "Oh." I was like, "Yeah, That's Val Venus. So he did some 3-minute job to, I want to say, Brock Lesnar, but I don't remember exactly. But that's kind of what it reminds me of, seeing Tyler go out there to die.
How apt that comp is makes me even sadder about all of it.
Oh God, no kidding. Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, it does. It sucks because, like, Tyler Breeze, he's such an I feel he's such an underrated talent. Yeah, I know we've talked about him in the past. Like, he's amazing in the ring. I'd love to see them do more with him, but at this point, it does. It sucks. I hope. I will say I was happy to see him tonight. I know in this particular spot, there was no chance in hell that he was going to win. And I know that, obviously he was out here just to put over, Escobar, but, I was happy to see him because, it's been a while since we've seen him. It's been a while since we've seen him in singles competition, for that matter. That's not true. I guess, Fandango was out of action for a little bit, but still, regardless, it's been a while since we've seen him in singles action. So I was kind of happy to see that. So, there's that, let's see. As far as the angle goes, I think you guys pretty much covered everything that I wanted to talk about. I like the inclusion of MSK here. They're such a high energy tag team. I feel like they're bringing a little extra to the division. I think it might get a little bit grating for some people, but personally, so far, I like it. Hasn't quite jumped the shark yet for me anyway, but I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add, so I'm just going to move on.
Should wrestling have dogs in it? It sure had a dog in it tonight. It had a dog 4 different times. We got an email from David Podnar. The email is dogisNXT. A couple of thoughts from tonight's show. Some may complain about the dog teaser, but I loved it. I mean, sometimes wrestling doesn't have to be overly serious. Caden showing you why you need to still wear a mask. And Raquel destroying Io multiple times is just impressive. Recovering from the attack from behind during the interview and slamming her through the wall looked great. The Battle Royal leading to a gauntlet match could be a bit confusing, but I like doing something different, and at least this explains the order or a gauntlet match. You earn your better order for the match next week. Thanks so much. Stay hydrated and rested for next week's 10 straight days of WWE content. Dave Podnar from Pittsburgh. Always like his emails. I thought it was fun. The sheetrocked wall. Caden showing why you still need to wear a mask. Yes, we will get to that Tian Sha bit. The dog. We got a dog going through the Capitol Wrestling Center. And I thought that this was fun and funny. I thought this was an amusing thing to do, a ridiculous conceit to set up a match. I definitely agree that wrestling does not have to be serious and shouldn't be all the time because it is ridiculous. And it can be a variety show, and you pick your spots on what is serious and what is not. We know probably, almost certainly, who this is setting up. It's probably not some big, big secret to bigger fans. And to those for whom this would be a spoiler, maybe they've never heard of this wrestler anyway. But if you follow her on social media, you may recognize the dog. Anything on Dog is NXT, Tom?
So admittedly, even though I mean... You're using the word spoiler. Is it all right if I just go ahead and say the name?
Go for it. I mean, I didn't on my recap, but it, fair warning now. Skip 5 minutes if you don't want to know.
There you go. You and I will be talking about spoilers I'm much more worried about tomorrow, which, don't get excited, listeners. That'll be dropping in like a month. But anyway, back in front of the curtain, I admit that even though I do follow Taya Valkyrie on social media, I didn't recognize the dog right away. And the first thing that popped to mind when I saw a cute little puppy was Shotzi Blackheart and her affinity for puppies and how she has been encouraging her, other newer incoming signees to rescue dogs like she does. So I was wondering if it was a Shotzi thing, and then Shotzi had a segment completely separate to this. I completely agree that this was a lot of fun. It's very whimsical. As I say with a lot of this stuff, I think even for as you know, it only takes a couple. It took me two segments. It only takes one night to figure out, oh, that's who this is going to be. I still think it would have been fun and maybe even beneficial for the reveal on the 13th to do these ahead of time, to have had this running for a month already. So each week we're wondering where the dog is going to be, and it becomes a talking point. Like, you know, hey, one week have the dog at William Regal's desk. No explanation, no reason, no nothing, just that's where it is that week. And there's no follow-up. That's just the cute little thing that it's doing, the Instagrammable thing.
Loomis with the dog. Like,
oh God.
Where Theory gets scared because somebody's watching him in the mirror, but it's the dog.
I did think that this was very winning, and anyone who's watched Taya, I think, would say that she is promising. My initial thoughts on her was, why isn't she just going straight to the main roster? But you know, in a situation where, and I guess I didn't mention this with Raquel and Io, where I'm mostly, I have no idea who's going to win. I said I'm in doubt, but I am leaning just the tiniest bit Raquel, because Io has gone through just about everybody. So I'm looking at someone like Taya or like Sare coming in and thinking, like, well, if Io retains, they could get fast-tracked to that top picture. And Taya is more than capable of doing that, and then and gently coming down from the top if/when she loses that. But shoot, I mean, she also... And coming from somebody who cherishes the lineage of this women's title, I would be in favor of Taya coming in and winning the gold right away. So I don't know. I'm off on a tangent now, but yes, the dog was an excellent little spot on the show. I wish we were going to get more of it.
Dogs, Nathaniel.
Dogs. I like dogs. I'm still looking for a dog. If anybody knows where I can find a dog, let me know. Anyway. I like this. I don't know if there's really a whole heck of a lot to say that wasn't really already said, but, it does seem like Taya Valkyrie. I didn't realize, I wouldn't have recognized the dog whatsoever until, I probably looked at it, on social media or something later on. I forget, it was either you guys or Doc Bruce or somebody pointed it out to us at some point, today. Yeah, I forget who it was. It's on Twitter. Somebody pointed it out. But yeah, you know, it makes sense. I like Taya Valkyrie. I haven't seen a huge body of her work. I've seen a couple matches here and there. But from what I've seen, what I've heard, I mean, she sounds like she should be able to come in and do something for the division. I don't know if I'd necessarily want to see her come in and immediately win the gold. I don't know. Ask me tomorrow. My opinion might be different, but at least that's my immediate thought is, if she was to come in, I don't know if I'd want to see her necessarily, dethrone EO or whoever the current champion was at the time. But I could certainly see her, in the conversation for, NXT Women's Champion down the road. Absolutely. So, I also agree. I think these vignettes should have gone on longer. I would have, I love that idea, Tom, of like, where's the dog this week? Kind of bring that for like 2 months or something like that, you kind of make it a talking point. And then, yeah, you have her debut at this takeover. It'd be great. But, it's kind of a little disappointing we're not going to get more of it. But what we did get, I did like.
And, even as I say that, we probably will get more. Maybe not in this exact way, but she'll probably cut promos holding the dog. Or maybe her little backstage segments will start with the dog running up to her. Yeah.
There were two women's tag matches on this show. One of them went 306 and one of them went 305. So Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell have the trust to get one more second of screen time. Gigi Dolin and Zeta Ramir against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. Yes, Indy pins, I believe, Zeta in 306.
after both heels hit their finisher. This is just simply to set up the match with the champions. They call out the champions, Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon, who come out on the tank. And I was very amused that one of them, I can't remember who says it, their verbal diarrhea runs together to me now, just goes, "You're going to say that our championships should be yours?" I'm like, that's literally how you got the championships. You claimed that you deserved a match that you did not, and I'm going to keep dying on that hill forever. So anyway, though, Zeta Ramir, I had to take a guess on the spelling because they haven't featured her on TV. And it was very hilarious. It looked like they were going to show their names, and it was not even a quarter of a second. It was up on the screen, and then it went away. And I'm like, great. Now I don't know who these people are. I couldn't remember the new name, Gigi Dolin, and I didn't know the name Zeta Ramir. Had to take a guess on the spelling, and I was wrong on both first and last names. But what are you going to do? The other one was Tian Sha versus Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro. This was interesting in that WWE.com did bill this as a tag match, but Mei Ying did not leave her seat. She had paint now instead of the full face covering, so we're getting closer to that. And she blew smoke onto the face of Caden Carter to, I believe, kill her. She's dead. She's gone. She's written out. Tian Sha goes over in 305 when Xia Li pins Casey Catanzaro. So on those two women's tag matches, Tom.
All that I've got on Candice and Indy versus Dolin, and I already forgot the name of the other one. As unfortunate as it is that they had that glitch, so we didn't really get too much of who these people actually are, although a lot of us, you know Gigi, or at least know of her. If they're going to do this women's tag team division thing, if matches like this become relatively routine, we're basically doubling up the amount of people from the division that are getting TV time, and I don't think that is in danger of reaching an excess yet, so I'm in favor of it. My only other note there was an inappropriate one. If I put on my William Regal hat, I would look at Indy and say, "Oh goodness gracious me." I do that most weeks, but this week in particular, "Oh goodness gracious me, Indy Hartwell." Casey and Caden versus Xia. I was wondering, you know, this is just me stuck on my little fantasy booking thing of thinking that Chan Sha might brainwash Casey. I was wondering if when Mei Ling expected, you know, as we might expect, did not actually participate in this match as advertised, if they were going to do some sort of Pavlovian thing, like, you know, ring a bell or do whatever kind of signal that was going to have Casey turn on her partner. But doing this with Caden approaching Mei Ling and getting choked out, and then the like steam or the knockout breath blown onto her, I'm into it. It's sort of like Japanese spray, the same sort of idea if she continues using it. So I think it already fits into what we recognize pro wrestling to be in its different facets. And, you know, it's just another little wrinkle to it that I'm intrigued by. And I thought that Caden sold it well, being choked out and then dying. I thought she handled her part of it well. So thumbs up.
Goodness gracious me. Another four knockbacks, aren't they? Just another four women that'll turn me down. Goodness gracious me.
You should see the one I have lined up for tonight.
Yeah, right. She's so bow-legged, she has to put her knickers on with a boomerang. You got to watch NXT 8 years back, folks. He is bizarre. Also, your comment on Indy, Tom, you didn't say it, but I agree. That is correct. Nate on these two women's tag matches.
All right. So I guess we'll start with Indy and Candice LeRae. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot, I guess, to talk about it. So I guess we'll start there. It was more or less just kind of a match to keep the female members of the way relevant and strong here. Gigi Dolin. Both Gigi Dolin and
Zeta Ramir.
You could kind of tell they were a little bit green. There was a few spots. I think it was like an Irish whip spot or something like that just kind of looked a little awkward. But overall, I think it went pretty well. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add there. The other match, I've loved this whole Xia Li Chen Sha angle for. Since its inception here, and this is really no exception. I didn't actually see anything that advertised Mei Ying for the match. It said I remember seeing things like Casey and Caden versus Chen Sha,
Chen Sha. It did not call out Mei Ying, so it was intentional in its vagueness, but. Okay. But, like, what else would it be is what Vic was trying to say. Just, I'm going to call out the obvious. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because, at first, like, that's what's going through my head, too, is, like, is it going to be her and Boa? Like, Lee and Boa or whatever? I like this. And the fact that it turned into a handicap match, it really kind of drove home just how brutal and vicious Xia Li has become. She's taken on two women here overcoming it. I liked the whole smoke thing, the choking out with Caden Carter. Whether or not she's dead, we'll see. Who knows? It's wrestling, so she'll probably return with druids in a casket or something. Who knows? Overall, really liked this segment. The smoke thing, I actually made the connection. You made a little bit ago with the Chinese mist or Japanese mist. I was kind of thinking something similar along those lines. When it was happening, she could kind of continue that if she does actually end up getting in the ring, which I mean, you can only assume that she's going to at this point. I have a feeling it's just inevitable. Keeping something like that up, I think it would be interesting. It'd certainly be a cool visual on TV too. So, overall, definitely like this and looking forward to seeing where this goes and what the payoff finally is.
I remember now saying when they revealed her name that I thought it was funny that Mei Ying sounds a lot like Mei Young. I'm now saying Mei Ling. I think I heard somebody mistakenly call her that at one point.
So I have a coworker named Mei Ling. So it is very confusing for me.
Ah, maybe you're the one that maybe you said that before, and for whatever reason that name stuck in my mind. But I'm just going to have to think Mei Young from now on, and then switch it from that.
Any excuse to think of Mei Young is a good one. Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, they're in that championship match. But I got to tell you, I think that Tian Sha might be the next tag team champions. We were struggling to come up with other teams earlier today, Tom, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. I'm loving it too. Again, pursuant to a conversation that people will hear us have in a few weeks, is there such a thing as guilty pleasure in art? If it's giving you a pleasure, then it's got merit. And that's how I feel about this storyline. Maybe, like, part of me wants to feel weird about liking it as much as I do, but I do. So, and that's the intent. I'm supposed to, and I do. Okay, there's one more match that was on this show. It opened the show. Roderick Strong versus Cameron Grimes. At the time, they were both supposed to be in the main event 12-man Battle Royal. Roderick Strong was written out of it. He lost this match to Cameron Grimes at 11:47 with the cave-in. Cameron Grimes, I kind of dug the cleverness of this finish where he pulls something out of his tights and you think, okay, it's a weapon. But it is it's a weapon of the mind, folks. It was an undisputed era wristband made to mess with Roddy's head, and it did just long enough for him to get eaten by the caveman, by the cave-in, and take the loss in 11:47. There was 47 minutes and 22 seconds of wrestling on this two-hour show. Later on in the show, Mackenzie Mitchell catches up with Roddy, and he says, "I'm done." And she says, "You're done? What do you mean you're done? You're done with what?" And he says, "All of it." And he walks out. So Roddy quitting. Tom?
I don't know what to make of Roddy walking out. There are like five different things I can think of for him to do next, and I have no idea which seems most likely. I did think that it was strange to do this match that they had already set up ahead of time before the Battle Royal on the same night as the Battle Royal rather than waiting until the 13th at the earliest. And I would say, you know, oh, well, it's good for COVID protocol because you've got the same guys working with each other, you know, staying out there longer. But give me a break. They've shown repeatedly that they don't care as much about that as they should. And we're also talking about a situation with 12 guys plus referees in the ring and announcers and fans there and so on and so forth. So all of that. Roddy as a singles babyface did not work the first time. It basically fell flat on its face. And putting him in, you had to both turn him heel and put him in an already successful faction to make Roddy more palatable. For all his talent between the bells, you had to do those things to make him work for a while. So I'm already not super optimistic about another singles babyface run. I don't think enough has changed about Roddy in the last couple of years to make me optimistic for that. And then using this finish, I suppose I agree that it's clever in subverting what we think when somebody's reaching into their trunks for a foreign object, but this just barely worked when Ciampa and Gargano did the same thing with DIY shirts. Or was it somebody else feuding with Gargano and messing with him? Whatever it was, it only worked because the Ciampa and Gargano storyline was so effective otherwise. I want to say it was like a Velveteen Dream thing, but I'm not going to spend too much time trying to remember exactly what it was. I think Ciampa was out on injury at the time. But regardless of that, it just barely worked there. So doing it here, I feel, takes somebody in Roddy who is really ice skating uphill in his new role. And I say that knowing that maybe something is about to change with this whole walkout thing that he just pulled. But he's already ice skating uphill, and it just makes him seem like even more of a sucker than he already was. So I don't know. This was a pretty okay show tonight, but I was down on this whole opening situation.
It was weird that they had this before. I didn't even put together that they were doing double duty until they showed that graphic. And I was like, oh, yeah. Because the first thing I thought was, why didn't they put these two into that match? Oh, right, they did.
And speaking of ice skating uphill, they've got him up against Cameron Grimes, who, come on, everybody likes Cameron Grimes. And his new entrance theme is a sing-along. It didn't play long enough this time to get to the sing-along point. But there's no way that you're going to get Roddy over as a babyface by putting him up against Cameron Grimes.
Yes, absolutely. Nate?
I couldn't agree more. And, I mean, Roddy, that last singles babyface run, that was, it was a failure. Really, it really was. I mean, that's essentially what led him into Undisputed Era and all that. I'm curious to see really what they're going to do with him. I'm hoping that this walkout tonight is a repackage for him or something, but we've talked about it before. Like he's a great hand in the ring. He's a great worker, but on the mic, he just doesn't have that charisma about him to be any higher than he is, I don't think. And I hate saying that about anybody, but I just, that's kind of at least the perception anyway. So, I don't see him going much higher than this, but he has been obviously in the Undisputed Era, he's played around in the main event and all of that. So I don't know if they're trying to capitalize on that. Well, I'm sure they are in some respects, trying to kind of put some shine back on him, hopefully, with this walkout. But we'll see. We'll see kind of what happens there. It's interesting, for sure, especially, just walking out, like, I'm done with it all. You know, didn't really kind of go into details, just all of it. You know, it kind of, like, kind of made me think, like, just almost like a mental breakdown. Just, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I lost my best friends. I'm now losing matches. Like, this is – what am I doing? What am I doing with my life, you know? That was kind of the vibe that I got from him there, which is – which is good, because, like I just said, usually his stuff behind on the mic and outside of the ring isn't super top notch. So I'm definitely digging that. Cameron Grimes, to the moon. Anytime I can see him, I'm happy. So there we go. I don't really have a whole heck about that either.
And we saw him twice, and the second time, ensured that we'll see him again next week.
Indeed.
Okay, email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. This is from Jack Argyle. Hey, guys, hope you're doing well. Now that we have official news, NXT is moving nights. What do you three want to see moving forward with the approach of the show? As someone who never watched NXT Weekly until BT Sport got the deal in 2019, I'm really looking forward to what the future holds right now, with them not having to worry about counter-programming any other shows and fully focus on their own show. I'm hoping the week after Mania, Aleister Black shows up. Saw photos of him at the PC recently. Although he could easily be called to be a Seth Rollins follower, I would love to see him do what Finn has done. It's not like Andrade, where he had been quite defined down. Aleister went a year unbeaten on Raw, which nobody ever brought up on the show, and before disappearing, lost a mini-feud to Kevin Owens. So he actually has not been hurt a massive amount like other talents. What do you guys think? Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. I got a little... asthma thing coming here. So let me throw to you quick, and hopefully I'll be right back, Tom.
I think I've said what I, if you've been listening to the podcast regularly, and of course I know you are, Jack, you know how I feel about the move to Tuesday nights. It's an opportunity for NXT to get back to focusing on itself, get back to at least, I know it's overly optimistic to think that they are, after what the last year plus has been for them live on USA, officially WWE's C show now, already essentially that, but you know what I mean? It's too optimistic to think that we're going to go back to the glory days, but hopefully they can, let's say with the maneuverability of being live, let's say they can just pretend that they're back on the taping schedule and actually write out 3 to 4 weeks of TV at a time and stick to it and not try to counter program and not try to, play cards that are in their hand just because they feel like they need to play a card that week because Shaq's on TNT or whatever it may be. So fingers crossed, we're not getting our old NXT back, but hopefully we get something that's more palatable than what this has been and something that makes for a show that we enjoy watching again. Aleister Black, what did I say last time we got asked about Aleister Black? I don't remember, but nothing has changed. So that, again, I think I probably said that there is but a small crop of people I think you can pull from on Raw or SmackDown that are known for having been on NXT, and you can bring them back to NXT like a Balor or an Ember, and it won't be as criticized as it could be with some others. And I feel like Aleister Black probably just barely makes that cut. Maybe. I. What is my reasoning for that? I don't know. Does it matter? I think he's been gone long enough from the main roster that he could show back up on any brand, but he could show back up on NXT, and he would be welcomed. Sure, why not?
Okay. And Nate.
Yeah. So I guess, as far as Aleister Black goes, I don't think he really was damaged too much on the main roster for him to be able to kind of come back to NXT and make an impact. Potentially, I mean, you know, when I think of Aleister Black right now, it's like I think of the, you know, the Ricochet tag team that was kind of a little floundering for both of them. I think of the Rey Mysterio or the Seth Rollins eyeball thing and just kind of some of the things that he did in on the main roster that weren't quite as good as the stuff that he was doing down at NXT. Changing up the entrance and all that. I could see that, you know, where he has been off TV for a while, have him come back and, you know, maybe give him that entrance back and kind of put him back into that old NXT character or some iteration of that would be cool. But I'm like where Tom was just saying, he kind of like just barely makes that cut. It's kind of like where I'm at. I could see it. I could see it maybe working, but I don't think it would have the same effect as somebody like Finn Balor coming back. Who I'd really love to see come back. And I don't think, he's prevalent on the main roster right now, but I don't really think the main roster would miss him too much. It'd be Kevin Owens. I would love to see Kevin Owens make another NXT run. I love the whole prize fighter gimmick, when he was the NXT champion, showing up on the main roster, you know, feuding with John Cena. There was a lot of stuff that he did there that I thought was great. So I would personally love to see him do one more NXT run. He came back at TakeOver a couple years, but 2 years ago now. I can't believe was that this past TakeOver or War Games?
Isn't that weird that I can't remember?
That was the one before, because the most recent one was the McAfee one.
Oh, sure.
That's right. Okay, cool. I'm trying to think. I'm like, this was pre-COVID, so yeah, it had to have been two War Games ago. I'd love to see that. There was Aleister Black, and then there was one other thing we talked about. Oh, the Tuesday Move. What I'd really love to see is really kind of echoing exactly what Tom said. In a perfect idealistic world, I would love to see them kind of go back to the same type of booking principles that they had when they were on, 1 hour taped show. And I think that they kind of had to stick to a lot of those because they were a taped show. You know, you tape 4 or 5 episodes at a whack, you can't really go back and change what you've already taped. You know, you can to some extent, but what you taped is what you taped. So, long-term storytelling and booking was the thing, that was kind of a thing they had to do because they were taping all these shows at a whack. But, now it's kind of, I feel like there's a lot of changing on the fly. There's a lot of, counter programming and things like that. So I'm kind of hoping where now they're not head to head and they can kind of, relax a little bit, even though they say they're relaxed and they're not trying to go up against sprint, not a marathon. I think this is the time for that to happen if it's going to happen. I don't think we're going to go back to the NXT we fell in love with back then, but I would love to see them get back to some semblance of that. It's just way too chaotic and quote main rostery at this point. So
The weirdest I ever saw them get personally was when they filmed two different finishes to Gargano versus Dream, and you didn't know which one they were going to go with. And part of that may have been the I don't need to get into specifics with it, but there may have been other reasons for that than just trying to keep the audience in the dark. They might not have known. That was the weirdest I ever saw them get. There were some situations where it would be reported that somebody got injured at a taping or after a taping, and they still would air the full taped storyline before letting the injury factor into the story. They would still air that content. So committing to that was a major, major reason why NXT was as successful as it was. And you mentioned Kevin Owens. He's very, very prominent, but in all honesty, I say there's a small crop of people that you could bring back to NXT, and there are probably a good number of names that somebody who's passionate enough could talk me into, maybe easily even. But when I say there's a small crop, Kevin Owens basically is the crop. He can get away with just about anything. So yeah, if he showed back up for a legitimate run in NXT, it would be open arms.
Yes, indeed. As far as what I want on Tuesday, I just want to slow down the pace a little. Like, not everything has to be breakneck. That would be number one thing for me, before everything else, before any other booking problems are solved. One more email The doctor is in. This is Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. Hope this email finds you well following this solid go-home show. Overall, I liked a lot of what is being built for TakeOver, and I think the two-night show will feel fresh and has plenty of appeal for both nights. That said, I think Raquel's fans are a really good chance of winning. They seem to be keeping Shirai strong in anticipation of a loss. I do think Finn retains, and I think Cole O'Reilly and Escobar Devlin are both contenders to steal match of the night. Keeping that in mind, what one match is each of you looking forward to, and what is your contender for match of the takeover? Can be different from your most anticipated match of the night. Thanks as always. Office hours are now over. The Professor. P.S. Does the cute dog belong to an incoming Taya, or will it be another female signee? It does belong to an incoming Taya. Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. Okay, so, you mentioned a couple that could steal match of the night. I think that Kushida Dunn is more likely to steal match of the night than either of those, even though they are going to be awesome. With Cole O'Reilly, would it really be stealing match of the night? I think it's expected to be. It's probably expected by most to be match of the two nights. And I have no doubt, Tom and I talked about this a lot today between our shows. We have no doubt that this will be the quote-unquote largest number of stars for a match. Like this could be the five-star match, but is this the match that should be five? Will it be five stars for the right reasons? This should be a five-star war, not a five-star pretty wrestling match. And I just hope that that we're going to get a real war. Escobar Devlin should be good, but for reasons not tied to wrestling, I'm not looking forward to it as much as I wish I was. The Kushida Dunn, I think, will be wonderful. I wish there was more meat on the bone, but they don't give Kushida particularly meaty feuds. So this is what he's got, and I'm sure it will be quite good. I expect the Women's Tag Championship will be very good. Indy has come a long way in a short amount of time, and the other three are all wonderful in the ring. I think that will be a great one, too. The triple threat tag, I think, could be memorable, or it could be throw it on the pile of fun schmaz triple threat tag matches. Lot of contenders for this on these two shows, Tom.
You cut out there, but I think I heard a T sound, so I'm just going to pick it up. I think you said you're looking most forward to Raquel versus Io, which I've already stated and still 45 minutes later is true. As far as match of the takeover, yeah, I agree for the same exact reasons that that Colin O'Reilly has that potential. But I think that Walter versus Ciampa, depending on how much time it gets, and I'm not a, you know, match has to have a lot of time to be great guy. The best match on the show tonight was Raquel versus Zoe at shy of 5 minutes, just for one example, one, you know, prevalent example. But Walter versus Ciampa, I think if it gets time, could really blow us away more than anything else. Boy, wouldn't it be funny if the dog walks up and they pan up from the boots and it's like, oh, surprise, it's actually Ginny instead. It's a surprise. Kairi Sane's back. We repackaged her. it would be a real troll job if it was Aoife Valkyrie.
Right. They pan up and it's a return. It's a returning, I don't know, Killian Dane in those boots. And Taya Valkyrie comes up and goes,
but goddamn.
And Taya walks up and goes, why do you have my dog? And, that's her entrance. There you go. We got Tom and I have done 4 hours of podcasting together, and now we are on Killian Dane in pink boots.
I don't know if I could top that.
I hope you cannot. Go ahead.
So, I think my most anticipated for this is also Raquel and Io, with a close second being Ciampa and Walter. I think you know, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, that is a very close third. And they've all been built so well at this point, with maybe the exception of O'Reilly and Cole, you know, which we kind of talked about a little bit ago. But they've all been built so well. They're all matches that I'm really looking forward to. And they've just they have a lot of there's a lot of consequence to the outcomes of these matches. So I think that I think those are probably the ones I'm looking forward to the most by far. As far as match of takeover, it's kind of, I think, going to be a toss between, in terms of match of takeover, I guess, in terms of like, you know, stars or whatever, you know, you're kind of talking about, you know, Cole and O'Reilly, you know, possibly being a five-star match, you know, the Devlin and Escobar being a ladder match. NXT, we don't normally get ladder matches in NXT, so they kind of pull out the stops. That could definitely be a, you know, kind of an unexpected, well, I wouldn't say unexpected because, you know, it's definitely a contender, but, you know, one of something that, you know, that kind of comes out, sorry, I'm exhausted, so I know I'm stumbling over my words here, but I've been up since 3 o'clock this morning. So yeah, there's a lot that that I'm really looking forward to. I guess I'm just going to leave it at that because I know I'm not making a whole lot of sense right now. So yeah, we're gonna leave it at that. I'm looking forward mostly to EO and Raquel and Walter and Ciampa.
Yeah, and you're starting to cut out on my end, so I don't know if that's my internet or yours, but it probably means that we should get the heck out of here before it all falls apart. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media. At Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. And if you haven't heard me and Tom enough, you'll get plenty more chances soon because we're going to be all the hell over these podcasts pretty soon here, Tom.
That is right. And before Mei Ying blows any more of her smoke all over us, at Tom Staup, and look for that movie review. I'm excited about it because I used to write movie reviews professionally. I miss it very, very much. It's been almost 8 years since the last time I had one published, so publishing one on the Torch is exciting. So check that out when it drops, you know, along with Grit and Glitter next week. And yeah, you'll be hearing our voices quite a bit coming up. So so yeah, Nate. Good.
Yes.
Nate Lindberg, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. Do the hits and misses for NXT and the SmackDown All Perspective Report, although I didn't do it last week. I had to sit out. So, Bruce, thank you for picking it up for me. I appreciate that. And if I'm not mistaken, we will be talking to you guys again in a few days on Wrestling Night in America. I think it's going to be the three of us for that show this week.
Indeed. And I just want to pass along a quick thank you to Giles Nicholson for his email. I'm not going to get into that on here, but thanks for the kind words. All right. Cheers, everyone. We will see you in, well, 3, 4. All righty.